This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScoop, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScoop.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome to the Twin Peaks Investing Podcast. My name is Peter Higgins and you can find me at Conkers3 on Twitter. And I'm here with my good friend Peter at Wheelie Dealer on Twitter. This is Twin Peaks Investing Podcast number 46 and it's just gone 6 p.m. on the 7th of April and we're now into a new financial year for the ISA. So if you have been busy buying yesterday and today in the UK, well done. You've had a good start to your new ISA season. And I'm sure Pete's done well over the last couple of days as well. Pete, how you doing, mate?
Yeah, I'm all right. It's funny you say about, you know, putting the money, obviously, because I'm retired, yeah, as it were. You know, I don't have spare cash sloshing around to go putting into my ISA. But I'm in a lovely situation, which I'm sure you are, Pete, mostly, where we've already got our money in the market. So when the market has a big boom up, we're taking advantage of it. And there is no better time in terms of my job, in inverted commas, than days like yesterday when, you know, you do absolutely nothing. You do nothing whatsoever and you make thousands and thousands and thousands of pounds on a day. It's just crazy, really, when you think about it.
I mean, that yesterday was a bit of a, I think, a bit of an anomaly. It was just bizarre. I think as the new ISA season coincided with the long bank holiday, you know, there was Friday the week before, and then a Monday missed as well. So it was like two trading days and then bang, got a new season. So all that pent up, you know, euphoria almost of
going back
to the markets able to add more cash to the ISAs as well and other investments just spurred the market on. And there was good news from the US as well regarding the stimulus as well. So yeah, it was lots of good news ready to add to the market, and they've had a good Tuesday and we're on a Wednesday today. Another good day for the FTSE. There's people talking about, you know, FTSE 7,000. And if we carry on this vein, Pete, we could see it during this month of April, unless, you know, the markets get a sideswipe and a knock to the chin, which is always possible as well. But yeah, some people had a good start to the new financial year for the ISA.
It's funny as well because, you know, it's like you said, in a way, yesterday was an anomaly, and I think you're right. But I think also there is this thing, I hate a lot of the stuff that the financial services industry trots out, but it does come out with this line, you know, over and over again, and I think there is some truth to it, that it says there are certain days in the market where you have to have your money in the market because they're such big days. And if you miss those big days, then over a year, your performance is hit. And I think there is quite a bit of truth to that, which is part of the reason, you know, I'm nearly always 100% invested where I can be. I very rarely, if I've got money out of the market sat as cash, I want to get that back in working for me as quick as I can. Well, obviously, without being stupid and just buying any old rubbish, you know, I like to choose what I buy. But I want to have my money in the market and working. The other thing that you may have noticed is that at the end of each month, January, February, March, we've had like a little sell-off the last week at the end of the month. And it's almost like part of the bounce yesterday was part of people realizing that sell-off wasn't going to go lower and the bulls were coming back in again to push it back up.
Yeah, I think historically, Pete, a lot of people tend to consolidate their accounts towards the end of each month, and that's where you get people trimming into the end of each month. So that's part and parcel of it. At the beginning of a new month, there's new money coming in. There's those people that put monthly incremental amounts into their into their investments as well. So the beginning of the month, you always see to get a little bit of a spike, but obviously you've got everybody being able to put money in their accounts if they've got access to additional funds, like you say. And historically, I think it's going back to, I think it's 2012, if I've got my dates right. It's been, yeah, that's it. It's been since 2012 that the S&P 500, which is obviously helps boost the UK markets, when they go up, we go up, has not had a losing April since 2012, Pete. So if they go up, hopefully the FTSE all share, FTSE 100 will go up as well. So we'll see what happens. It's we can always hope, mate. And I've got a feeling in my water, because see that magic 7,000 this month, if the markets are just reasonable, you know.
I'm with you. I think the breakout from, I don't know, what was it, 6-7 or whatever it was, and we're back up. We nearly hit 6-9 today on the FTSE. I think the fact that it managed to break up out of that range is actually a really bullish thing. And it's sort of telling us that the bulls are really still in control. I mean, the way that the NASDAQ, you know, went wobbly towards the end of March, but again, the bulls have come in. So despite all of the crazy overvaluations and despite all the talk of rotation from tech back into old economy stuff, the simple fact is, you know, the NASDAQ is not far off its all-time high still, and it probably could take out its all-time high. It'd be interesting if it does over the next sort of couple of weeks.
I think there's definitely a good chance of that happening, Pete. I think it's interesting looking at some stats that I got over the past year to date, that that globally, that some small caps have outperformed year to date. You're looking across the board regarding those kind of stocks, mid caps in second place, and then large caps in third place. And I think regarding the quality, that could probably change going forward. But we were talking about the rotation from growth to value, weren't we? From growth to value, Pete.
Yeah.
And that's what's happened year to date. But more so in the small cap side of it, that's done well. And maybe that will continue then towards the growth, the larger cap ones, and help the FTSE 100. Someone posed me a question on Twitter. I think it might have been yesterday. I'm losing track of the days now, mate, because I'm just so chilled out and not really doing a lot. So it was yesterday, sorry. So this was from, I'll give him a shout out because he tends to give us quite regular feedback.
Oh, good man.
At Dave Glass 1. He usually gives us regular feedback, and he's a good follower of our podcast. And he was like, if we ever thought that value were outperforming growth, then the FTSE 100 through 7,000 must be on the cards, even with my limited investing brain. So what I said to him was, you could indeed be right, Dave, as the rotation to value continues with quality FTSE 100 dividend paying stocks showing good momentum and strong 3 months returns. Now, I'm going to give you a couple of stocks here, folks, to do some research on. These are quite chunky FTSE 100 dividend-paying stocks. You've got Ashtead, up to yesterday, was plus 36% in 3 months total returns. That's with dividends. I'm going to give these figures with dividend total returns. Aviva, plus 25%. Kingfisher, which we've spoken about before, plus 20%. Antofagasta, if I've pronounced that correctly, 17%.
Sounds about right.
Yeah. Barrett, 14%. Persimmon, 13%. Taylor Wimpey, 12%. Solid, chunky, slow-moving, some people would say boring stocks, all done exceptionally well in the space of 3 months. So that's the rotation there toward value and quality of value. So if that persists with other value stocks in the FTSE 100, I think we'll see the 7,000, Pete, potentially this month, unless somebody comes across and swipes, BP, HSBC, AstraZeneca, even lower, something like that. I think we'll see 7,000 otherwise.
I'm with you, and you know, if you talking about how the small caps and stuff have done so well, and when I look at the charts every weekend and pretty much every night, the FTSE small cap chart is the most beautiful chart I'm seeing. It is just a beautiful uptrend, a really nice channel, and it just does little pullbacks and then it goes up again, little pullback, up again. Whereas things like the AMOL share had sort of shot up, and they're much more choppy, and you know, you can see the illiquidity within AIM. And the FTSE 250 has been doing pretty well, but I don't think it's at an all-time high. I think it actually fell back from an all-time high, and then it looks like it's sort of going to take it on again. But yeah, I mean, so many indexes around the world are doing so well. Like, you know, the DAX is hitting all-time highs, the S&P 500's all-time highs, the NASDAQ's only just off all-time highs, the Dow's at all-time highs. Nikkei has been strong, but it's got this really strange hangover, because back in the 2000s or whatever, it's something like 40,000. So it's always got that sort of hanging over it. But you know, you can almost ignore it, as it was so long ago. And that one's been doing well. So many indexes look so strong. You know, I mean, we are in this strange time where it is a little bit too easy to make money, which sort of makes me a little bit nervous. But then again, we very rarely get a sell-off as we go into summer. You know, once we've had the spring wobble, and I think we might have had that last week, and as you say, you know, the next few weeks we might get a wobble, but it's pretty unlikely, I think. The next wobble is usually in the autumn, September, October. That's when I would really, well, August, September is when I'd really be worried. But I think for most of summer, we tend to just cruise and it tends to be fairly easy. So, you know, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned the FTSE 250, Pete. It closed up 0.76% today at 22,160.57. And I think that is probably a new all-time high.
Oh, you're probably right then, yeah.
The FTSE 250.
I'll tell you what, I actually got sidetracked, because what I meant to say was that the little small caps and the FTSE 250 stocks have done really well. But if you look now in terms of valuations, a lot of the FTSE 100 stuff does look cheap. You know, so when you look at AstraZeneca, Glaxo, BP, RDSB, even the miners are still paying big yields. Aviva, which I hold myself, which we just talked about, they really do tick the value. But I mean, some of these things are on like forward PEs of 10. I mean, that is cheap. And especially when you've got a really stonking bull market. So I think there's a great opportunity to pick up lots of pretty cheap shares, really, that are paying good dividends, that are probably going to give you upside, especially if the FTSE 100 can crack on to 7-8.
I think that's the important aspect of it, Pete. I think these companies that have been, you know, to use the word that everyone uses, completely out of favor for the past year and a half, maybe 2 years, because everyone's been
hated,
buying,
mate. Hated.
Yeah, hated tech-related stocks, could power the FTSE 100, FTSE 350 higher over the next 3 to 6 months. If they're just allowed to get on, then we don't get really any big negatives in the market. I mean, talk about unloved stocks, which even I've written off some of these stocks. Stuff like Cineworld, Pete, which is a FTSE 250 at the minute, which 6 months ago was 27 pence, is now sitting at 103 pence, up 280%. Now, I'm not sure how many people, if you're out there and you bought at 27, 28, 30 pence, 50 pence, very, very, very well done. Mitchell and Butlers, Pete, MAB, ticker symbol, 134 6 months ago, now 329, that's up 145%. Yeah. A bank for all intents and purposes, Virgin Money, VMUK, 81 pence 6 months ago, now 195, up 141%.
Do you know, that's interesting, because we talked about Virgin on the podcast quite a while ago, so we probably weren't far off a good gain on that one, I'd imagine, when we talked about it.
So, I mean,
Because if you remember,
so
that
go on.
was one where book value was pretty much the same as the market cap or less. And I remember we were flagging it up and saying, yeah, this just looks silly cheap. Obviously, I didn't buy it, and I don't think you did,
No, I
but I hope
didn't.
you
I'm not a
everyone
big
was
fan of
listening.
banks, to be fair, Pete. I'll have to go back
No.
and probably look on the tweets later on or off air to see when we mentioned Virgin. But yeah, it's done really, really well. Hammerson, I think we mentioned that. I thought it was going to go under. Same with InterU. HMSO, remember the retail outlet people? With
Yeah.
everything shut, went down to 17 pence. Currently sitting just shy of 38 pence. That's up 114%. And then you've got the Rank Bingo people, Pete. RNK,
Oh, yeah, right.
97 pence 6 months ago. Now sitting at 207, up 112%. So there's a few bargains to be had, mate. And then there's one that we mentioned, which I think lots of people bought after they'd done their own research, was Royal Mail, RMG.
Yeah, I've
249 6 months ago, and I think it touched the fiver last week, I think, Pete. It's at 494 at the minute.
Yeah, they're funny ones though, because like, yeah, let's take Cineworld. Yeah, I personally, I mean, I think if you're someone who doesn't mind taking a bit of risk, and I think if you've got a diversified portfolio and you don't put all your money in it, then maybe it could work out well. For me personally, I just it doesn't interest me at all, really, because it's saddled to the hilt with debt, like you can't imagine. There's a real uncertainty about when and how and if people are going to be able to get back into cinemas and see films. Will there be a reluctance? Will there be limitations on how many people are allowed into a cinema theatre? To me, it's just a stock that just has so many problems around it. I think, why would I buy that when I could go and, I mean, I've got a load written down here. Like, I'll give you an example. Well, Standard Chartered, the bank, Stan, Stan. I think that'd be far better stock with a lot less risk and even have some takeover potential, perhaps, or whatever. Okay, banks are risky, everything's risky, but I just think things like Cineworld are so saddled with problems. I just, for me personally, it's just not my taste.
No, and equally, Pete, I wouldn't be a fan of Cineworld, but some people who are more or less risk averse, sorry, more risk averse than us, Pete, have taken the opportunity to go in there. I
Yeah,
mean,
less.
I'm known for taking, far greater risk than you on most occasions, but even that would be too rich for my blood.
Mean, I
Even
guess
back
the
at
danger is,
27 pence, I wouldn't have gone near it, Pete.
have the good gains been had in Cine? I suspect a lot of them might have been. And it's almost like it's got to the point where the easy jump, the bounce, was captured by people. But now you're taking on a lot of risk to get nowhere near the kind of bounce that you could have got before. And and especially if there's going to be like a sort of move into to more of the quality kind of solid FTSE 100 stuff, maybe people won't want things like Cine.
There is that risk, Pete, and I think that's the nature of speculation. Sometimes you end up not being an investor in the stock, you end up being a trader in the stock. You end
Or a
up
gambler.
you end up going into it for a very, very short space of time. So that's the conscious thing you've got to be remembering. You can't go into these blind. You've got to go in knowing the risks, and that's a major issue. Going into most of these stocks at the moment that are laden with debt. If they've been locked, closed, supply chains have been impacted, then you're going to have a problem going forward with them managing their own debt and repayments. And then that's the situation with HMSO. I think Hammerson, InterU has already buckled and gone. How much revenue will they get, and how much rents will be paid once these shops start to open again? And how many of them will simply not open again? So yeah, you've got to be careful. I think Cineworld, people going into cinemas, I'm sure people are going to be looking forward to having that experience again and being in the movie, watching a movie in that sort of environment. But how will they do it safely? I don't know. Don't know what how they'll do it, Pete, and
And
whether they'll get the numbers again.
how long is it going to take? I mean, you might find that in a year's time, they're only getting 50% of the audience they were getting before. And they're all sat there wearing masks, and they can't put popcorn in their face because they, you know, they can't drink.
Sorry. You
know, and it's sort of like,
oh my gosh.
You know, it's really, there's so much uncertainty. And then, so not only have you got a company that's absolutely up to the hilt in debt, which it was before the COVID problems, you've also got uncertainty about what kind of cash flows it can make in the future. So I just think it's, you're just taking on massive risks, really. But, you know, it comes back to what your investing approach is. I mean, I'm very, very risk averse, and I'm very, very inactive. Some would say lazy. And basically, you know, I want to buy stocks. When I buy a stock, I want to buy a stock that's going to be good for me in 5 years' time. You know, I want to buy it, park it, forget about it. I don't want to be messing around with it all the time. Whereas if you're someone who's much more active and you're on the thing all day long and whatever, then yeah, you can take more risk and you can be jumping in and out if that's what you want to do, fine.
Yeah, it goes back to the other adage, Pete. I think as we get older, we take less risk. Young bucks, as we call them, the millennials, who we're called boomers, by the way, Pete. My daughter's friends keep telling her.
We're
boomers, mate. We're not.
No, mate, I've got good news.
No, mate, we're boomers. We're the old ones, mate. No. So the millennials between 20 and 40.
No. We're Generation X.
Yeah, they're taking far less risk. They're taking far more risk than us, mate. And it comes down to the confidence side of it, Pete, whereby we take less risk, they take more. But invariably, over the duration of time, we end up in a situation where they, because of confidence, think they know everything. And then over time, they find that they don't know as much as they think they know. And then they find out that investing is actually a bit more complicated than they thought. And eventually they go through the growth curve, Dunning factor, the psychology of confidence, really. And they learn, not necessarily the hard way, but hopefully during over time, their confidence comes back to the norms, and they take less risk, you know?
Yeah, I think it really depends on the individual. And I think there are some people, but I think they're quite rare, who really are very talented traders. And even from a young age, they're very good at it. And they are the kind of people who can do the in and out, and they can make a very good return out of it. But I think there's a lot of other people who try to do that and just end up over trading, getting themselves in a pickle, buying something, selling it 2 minutes later before the ideas had a chance to develop. And just basically the busy fools. Yeah, I see a lot of busy fools around. There's a lot of people working very hard to achieve not very much. And I think people need to really think about what they're doing and think, am I really trading in a way that is sensible, or am I trading in a way where I'm just basically making life hard for myself?
Indeed. I mean, this is the whole purpose of the Dunning-Kruger effect, Pete. I mean, if everybody wants to just check where they think they are on the confidence curve, they need to look at the Dunning-Kruger effect, confidence versus competence, and eventually you'll find out where you're at with it all by just studying. Because eventually, the other aspect of it, Pete, and we keep going on about research, is that people need to go back and look at the past year, right? So last ISA season, have a look between January or even the April March time of last year through to this March time, and where the stocks that went wrong for them, the stocks that they end up shutting down or exiting or losing money on, and have a look back and then look through your diary, look through your journal, and think, okay, what led me to buy that stock? You know, what conviction did I have in that stock? What happened to that stock to let me sell it or exit it the time that I did? What's happened to that stock since then? What's been my learning from that? Yeah, because invariably the lot of the mistakes that we make aren't down to the quality of the stock, but the quality of our own psychology, yeah, and our conviction in that stock, yeah, and our confidence, yeah, and also our competence regarding the execution of that particular investment. So I think one of the major things learning of last year was that period of time between March and April of last year when everyone got an absolute punch on the chin. And we had a little period where we all learned another level of humility. And some of that humility has gone again because the market's enriching everybody and not teaching that many of us lessons. So people are getting overconfident again and are just willy-nilly in choosing stocks or chasing stocks that other people have told them about without doing enough research on them themselves.
Oh, there's so much overconfidence around at the moment. Honestly, it's at incredible levels, no doubt about it. I mean, some of the absolute trash I'm seeing that people are buying, it just makes me cringe. You know, I saw one the other day. I mean, I have to tell you this one. Do you know that one, Dev Clever?
No, Pete, I don't know anything about that one. Go on.
And I mean, it just, you know, maybe it will work out. Maybe people will get lucky. But, you know, you're talking about a company here that's basically only been established about 5 minutes, might only been 4 minutes, to be honest. And what it is supposedly going to do is virtual reality, VR, and, you know, e-learning and stuff like that, yeah? And it's got several contracts lined up with different education establishments, schools and whatever, yeah, which is all great. And its revenues last year were 1.25 million revenue, yeah? The market cap, when I was looking at it, actually, I'll tell you what it is today. The market cap today is 185 million pounds, yeah? So basically, imagine if Dev was making £1 million of profit. You've got 185 million market cap. So basically, you're talking a PE of 185 million if it was doing £1 million of profit. But it's not. It's actually losing money. And it's done several equity raises. It has got some money, like 12 million, maybe a little bit more, maybe 18 million in the bank, yeah? So it's got that to its credit, and obviously that will keep it going for some time. But it just strikes me that how are you going to get from 1.2 million of revenue and losing money into a situation where you're making enough profit to make 185 million pound market cap realistic? I mean, to be honest, you'd have to be making something like, if I was being generous, you'd have to make 6 million, 7 million profit to make that a sensible valuation. I just can't see it.
It's not a company I'm familiar with, Pete. So I sense you're befuddled by it, bemused by the company and what they've done thus far. I mean, the one thing I always say regarding AIM stocks and certain stocks that are highly, highly speculative is just keep an eye on the share count, the number of shares that were at IPO. How many was there? Right, versus the market cap of the company, right, and what they've done. Then have a look, year one, year two, year three, year 10, whatever. You've said this one's been around 2 minutes. Have a look at what the share count is now on the company versus when it IPO'd and what it's done. Because invariably, they have to make good all these fundraisers and all the placings that they've done versus the market cap. I mean, if the market cap is just being sunk on cash burn, at some point or other they're going to keep coming back for the market, and there's another 10% of shares available to be sold, another 10%, another 15%, and you're saying they've got cash now, but is that just the cash from the last raise that they've done, Pete?
I mean, I think there was a raise this morning, so
that
gives you, I think it was to pay for an acquisition they'd done or something, but you know, you just get this situation. You're just getting constantly diluted. And we've seen it a million times. What happens is these things shoot up like a rocket with all the excitement and all the ramping and all the hype, and they shoot up. And then after a while, results start coming out and reality hits them and they just tank. And we've seen it time and time again. People need to realize that, 90% plus of new businesses fail. Dev is effectively a new business. It's been around literally 2 minutes. So, like, why on earth would this business be this amazing success when it's got no track record whatsoever? It's the same old story. It might work if you're new to the game. Don't go put in all your money in it. Just have a little bit of your portfolio in it and see how it goes and learn from it. But, you know, the people who put all their money on it and they mortgage the house and they take bank loans and they just end up blowing themselves up.
I think for me, Pete, my concern with any highly speculative stock, I mean, I've just put it up here now and it's up in the one year alone. It's up 1,051%. So somebody, quite a few people have been chasing that stock. And year to date, it's up 137% right now. Yeah. So in the space of from January, the whatever, second, third of this year to the 7th of April now, it's up 137%. Somebody's chasing that. Lots of people chasing that. Would I purchase that? No. Could it be up? Share price is now 36 pence. Could it be at 72 pence this time next year when we speak about it again? Very possible. But yeah, it's not one for me.
Especially the bull market like this.
Yeah, so good luck to those that are invested in it. Good luck to those that got in there early, and well done to those that got in there early, but not for me. I've been going in the opposite direction, Pete. I'm getting ready to spend as much time out and about with friends,
yeah,
family,
doing
stuff. So I've been going this last year and middle of this year, I've been buying higher quality stocks and trying to just buy them and forget about them. So I've gone in the opposite direction, mate. Going back to the year so far, I've got rid of a couple of stocks. I spoke about Arrow before, Pete.
Yeah,
Arrow Global.
Yeah.
Yeah, that had a takeover. I bought it at 85 pence on the 8th of July last year and just over 74.5 pence on the 20th of August last year. And sold out of them last month at £2.80 odd after they received their fifth bid at 307. Then they extended it, so I thought, you know what? They agreed 307. Now they're asking for an extension. So I sold it towards the end of March. And then only about a week later, they confirmed the 307 bid. So I missed out on about 20 pence for that share.
Could have gone the other way, couldn't it?
Could have gone the other way. But that's what I was working on, that's a risk ratio of that. It ended up back down to about £2, £2.50-ish or something like that. So I sold it. And I got 262% in 9 months. So that was a relatively high risk sort of play. Trimmed ITM, which I mentioned to people before, at 655. On one tranche, I got 2,748% return on that one.
Fantastic.
IPF, International Personal Finance, bought at 39 pence, 26th of May 2020. More at 58 pence. On the 11th of June 2020, and I trimmed it just shy of 96 pence, and then sold the rest of it at 105 and banked 129% in total. And then I did a bit of a trade backwards and forwards with NSF, and I sold them for in the middle of March for a total of 82%.
What's that?
NSF?
Yeah.
Non-financial, mate.
Oh, yeah, I know the one, yeah. Is that used to be something to do with Prudential, wasn't it?
Yeah, non-standard finance.
That's it, yeah.
But the reason why I've been mentioning those speculative stocks is because what I'm trying to do is get rid of the speculative ones and enhance the ones that I've already purchased and the ones that I'm building positions in that are further up the food chain, preferably going to be FTSE 100, FTSE 350 stocks. And one of the stocks I bought last March, Pete, so I've had it for over a year now. So those that are grumbling, that saying that, oh, Pete, you should share your stocks straight away. This is down to research again. So we talked about electric vehicles, Pete, and stuff that's needed in those vehicles and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
One of the things that's going to be needed for all electric vehicles It's not a rare element or a battery metal. It's copper.
Yeah.
And one of the largest copper plays is, Pete?
Antofagasta.
Rio Tinto.
Yeah.
So Rio Tinto, a behemoth stock. I purchased on the 9th of March, at £32.49, just shy of 50 pence, £32.50 on the 9th of March. So I'll be sharing that with folk. And why did I buy that? Because of the dividend, again. At the time, it was unloved. Nobody wanted it. It was getting sold off with the bathwater last March. It's sitting at the moment, it's been as high as £65 this year, and it's currently at £57, closed at £57.43 today, and it's still yielding today at 6.23 pence. And it's...
Sorry, is that 6.23 pence or percent?
Sorry, 6.23% yield.
It's a good yield, isn't it?
Even now, when I was buying it, it was way higher than that.
I'm saying that there's a lot of stocks in the FTSE 100 that actually still look good value. I mean, to me, that sounds pretty good value. If you can get 6% and you've got potential for capital upside as well, then that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I'm happy with that. I mean, at the time when I was buying it, I was still a bit like, ooh, because you know me and mining companies don't really bode well, Pete. I've been building for the last little while a couple of alternative stocks in the lithium and cobalt space, and so on and so forth. So I'll speak about them at another time in the future. So I'm just trying to build a space in my portfolio for a couple of stocks. And I've got a few more FTSE 100 stocks and FTSE 350 stocks that I'll mention going forward. For me, Pete, I want to spend as much of 2021 when I'm allowed to, away from my screen, mate. I'm not necessarily going to be in the pub all the time, folks. So just don't worry about me drinking too much.
I will be.
I will be drinking a fair bit, but I won't be drinking. I won't be in the pub. I'll just be out and about, having a good time.
Well, I mean, that's totally the sort of stance I want to take. I mean, one thing I was going to say about was that I've been for probably 5-6 years or something. I've been running an experiment where I've been running an income portfolio, where the idea was that I would have a small portfolio with about 12 stocks in it. I've since grown that to say I'm now going to have 15, but that will be the limit, yeah?
Yeah.
And my sort of intention was that it would be a portfolio that I never do anything to. I literally do not touch it. And the idea being that it gets me around, well, I originally wanted 5% yield from the portfolio, but what I've realized over time is that that's a little bit unrealistic, in that what happens is that if you buy fairly reasonable stocks and they do pretty well, then because they rise in capital value, the amount of yield reduces, so I'm probably getting around 4% dividend yield from it. But what I'm doing is, if I buy a new stock to go into that portfolio, or if I top up one that I've already got, then I am looking around that 5% dividend yield kind of level. I mean, I will go down to probably 4. I might even buy some on 6 or 6.5 if I think the risk stacks up, you know. But I really want a nice diversified portfolio with all sorts of different stuff in it. And the whole point being that you leave it alone. Anyway, point is, up until 2020, it had done pretty well, and it had returned about 7 or 8% a year. And if you go on my website and on the educational blogs page, and it's got scores on the doors, yeah, that I do every year. I do it sort of like January every year to report how I've done on the year before. And in there, it's got the income portfolio, and it tells you exactly how it's done, and even has a screenshot of the actual account, telling you what values in it, whatever. And so every year up until last year, it had done sort of like 7-8%, which I think is pretty good when you think I'm not doing anything. But then last year, obviously with the problems, it got really kicked. and it was down, I think it was down about 8% or maybe 9%. It took quite a kick in. So I was really pleased last night when I looked to see how it was doing, and it's up about 4.5% this year. So we're sort of crawling back the damage, and fingers crossed, I think it can get itself back to a situation where over the many years I've been running it, it'll probably be averaging about 6 or 7% rather than the 7-8 it was before. But we'll see how it pans out, you know, but it's certainly started the year well. And if the FTSE 100 can keep recovering, because it holds a lot of FTSE 100 stocks like AstraZeneca, Glaxo, Shell, whatever, I think it can probably, you know, do pretty well this year. So we'll see what happens.
Pete, 6.5-7%, mate. That's that for boring stocks that allow you to sleep at night to just sit there compounding away. That is still very, very, very good, mate. And if you were to go out and speak to most fund managers, you know, they'd be very, very happy with 7% a year. You know, after expenses, being able to compound that for people, you know, that don't want the risk of a stock, you know, or a fund that's going to be dropping 7% a year. You know, people want to just be able to sleep at night, Pete.
You know, yeah, that's exactly.
And that's an element of your portfolio. It's not the total performance of your portfolio.
That's it. It's just a part of my portfolio. And it adds to the diversification as well, which I quite like.
It goes back to the need for people to remember that part of investing is also about preservation of capital. You know, you're looking not to lose money. You know, we're unfortunately going to be in a situation where a lot of these, you know, going back to the conversation we're having earlier about these young bucks, they're going to come into the market with a couple of £1,000 or money off the credit cards, and they're going to end up losing money, and they're going to be scarred for life and never come back to investing at all, ever.
That's the sad thing. I hate that.
And that to me is a really, really big concern, because some of them are going to miss out on the opportunity to be financially independent earlier, you know. And for me, the best thing that ever happened to me is to become financially independent. I can get up and do whatever I want. The greatest source of freedom for me isn't about how much money I've got. It's about the ability to do whatever I want, whenever I want, you know. Being able to come and go as I please post-lockdown, you know, taking lockdown out of this equation. If you rang me up, Pete, and said, oh, by the way, I'm driving past the area, I'm going to be there at 10 o'clock in the morning or 11 o'clock at night, let's go out and do something, I can go and do it.
If I want to do that, checking my sat nav, because I'd be very lost, mate. If I was driving the Sabres and I went past your house, I'd be...
But you know what I mean? I used to just love it, Pete, on a Thursday afternoon or a Friday afternoon or whatever day of the week, someone just ring me and say, you know what, mate, I'm having a bit of a day of it, you know, fans are coming out. And I'd just be able to drop down tools off, you know. Yeah. And if someone said to me, oh, by the way, that we've got an opportunity here, and I'm thinking, they're all going away, all the crew, all going away for 2 weeks to wherever it is in the world, I don't have to go to my boss and say, well, I do actually, I've got to check with the business.
Yeah, you'll still need...
Yeah, the two bosses. I don't have to go to the boss and say, can I have a special, you know, blah, 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 to take 2 weeks off to go wherever I want in the world. I can just stop, Pete. I can just stop and just do it. And that's the greatest freedom you have is the freedom of your own movement, mate, to be able to go and do what you want and spend time with the people that you want for as long as you want without watching your watch and your clock. That is freedom.
Totally true.
And that is priceless.
Hey, while we're on the subject of income portfolios, I just want to mention something that came up this morning. There was a company reported called Residential Secure Income, R-E-S-I, Resi, And the interesting thing with Resi is that it's something like, say, 5% or 5.3% dividend or something. But the interesting thing was, I mean, I think that would probably make a reasonable income portfolio share, yeah? But the thing about it was, if you look at a three-year chart, it's been churning out the dividend, so you're getting a nice dividend of 5% whatever every year, and it's probably slightly increasing. But the thing is, the share price is completely flat over 3 years. It has done nothing for 3 years, yeah? And I guess my point is that there are alternative stocks, and one that I noticed just this afternoon, well, I got a couple, IHR, which is Impact Healthcare REIT, right, whatever you want to call it, that one is paying 5.6% dividend. But if you look at the chart's actually been steadily going up for 3 years. So its total return, which is, you know, the dividend plus the capital gain, is actually quite nice. So of the two, I mean, obviously you need to think in terms of diversification, because one is a housing rental thing, which is one thing, and another one is care homes, yeah, the IHR is care homes. But the point is, you can find stocks that pay nice dividends, but they also give you a bit of capital appreciation as well, which is just the kind of meat you want in an income portfolio.
Yeah, I mean, IHRP, it's nice, slow and steady, other than the blip it had last year.
Yeah.
You've got 1 year total returns, 28.9%. That's pretty good 1 year it's had. 3 year annualized is more realistic. 10.3. Yeah, 10.3 compounded. That's very good.
That's because of the drop last year, isn't it?
Yeah, 3 year annualized of 10% is not bad at all.
Exactly.
So I'd prefer that one, as you've said. And it's sitting at a premium at the minute, Pete.
Yeah.
4.9%. But yeah, it's not too bad. I'd opt for IHR of those two.
But I guess the other way to look at it is, like, for me personally, right, I've got Primary Health Properties, PHP, in my income portfolio, which actually I think is quite similar in some ways to IHR. It's probably a little bit less risky, yeah? So in that case, I probably wouldn't want IHR because I've already got PHP. But then RESI might come into the equation because it's something different and gives that diversification.
I hear what you're saying, Pete.
I think what I'm saying is, whenever you're looking at, but for me personally, whenever I'm looking at buying any stock, I don't just look at the stock in isolation, yeah? I look at the stock in terms of what it brings to the portfolio party. I noticed somebody on Twitter, right, today, right? They'd said, oh, I've just bought this stock, and they'd bought RDSB and BP. And I thought to myself, what is the point of buying RDSB and BP? They're the same stock. They're effective. the drivers of BP are going to be very similar to the drivers of RDSB. So why don't you just buy more of one or whatever? Do you see what I'm saying?
I'm laughing because I think that's something I've done in the past, Pete. In my haste, where I'm indecisive, I've ended up going, "Oh, sorry, I'll have the both of them." I wouldn't do that now. And no discredit to the person that's done that. They're just trying to saddle both horses with one jockey. And that may be not a bad way of going about it.
They may have their reasons doing it, you know.
Yeah, but the problem you've got there is, you know, you end up with two holdings being impacted by whatever happens with oil over the course of the next 3 months, 6 months, or 3 years. I would have chosen the best of the two. I said, I would have done a bit more research and a bit more digging and chosen the best one. Which one would I have chosen at the moment? I'd probably choose BP because of their green agenda. But wouldn't be close behind RDSB, really. I don't think there's much in them, but yeah, there's of the two, I'd probably choose BP.
You wanted to talk about the charity that we support.
Yeah, as folks know, Pete and I are doing the Twin Pete's challenge, and essentially we're just trying to raise some funds for the disabled charity Memphis. And the page is on my website, and it's on the Just Giving page, which is the Twin Pete's challenge. We've raised, I think I'll have to find it now, Pete. You've just prompted me.
It's well over 1,000 now, isn't it?
We've raised over £1,000. The target is initially 2,500, And we're just asking the listeners, you listeners, you know, your global listeners that have been absolutely fantastic to us, to support the charity in whichever way you can, just by making a small donation if you can afford to. That's if you've enjoyed the podcast, if you've made a bit of some change from it, by making some investments, you've done well out of it, and you think you can donate a pound or a fiver or a tenner. It just helps one of the young children or the families be supported in the community as we've done it before.
Thanks to everyone who's given us some support to that. So I also want to say is that we're sponsored by ShareePad and ShareScope. If anyone wants to use ShearePad or ShareScope, go onto their website, go to their subscribe page, and it's got like a promo code box. And if you type Twin Peaks in there, then effectively you get a month off from your subscription. And the other thing I wanted, we wanted to talk about if you're listening on like Apple or Overcast or Spotify or whatever, you can subscribe to this podcast. You just press the button or whatever. Don't cost you anything. And the thing is, you'll then know when new one comes out, when it will remind you about and whatever, as if you could possibly forget. What are the platforms we're on, Pete?
Well, the thing I keep forgetting to mention is that if you've got one of those Alexa or personal sort of audio newbie things in your house, you can just say to your Alexa, "Alexa, play Conker's Corner," and you will get the Twin Peaks Investing podcast coming through your Alexa player. So we're on iTunes as well, Google Podcast, SoundCloud, Audio Boom, Overcast,
YouTube,
and others. Lots of people are telling me they're on the platforms I've never even actually encountered before. So that's really good that it's spreading the word. But one of the things I wanted to say, going back just briefly, Pete, to the charity, it's on the Just Giving page, Just Giving fundraising Twin Peaks challenge. We've had some really great donations so far, and essentially, this is exactly £1,020.80, excluding gift aid, we've donated so far. And the idea at the minute, we've had, including Pete and myself, we've had another 21 people support the podcast, sorry, support the charity fundraise that we're doing so far. We're at the moment averaging 2,500 listeners to each podcast that we do every 2 weeks. And if everybody donated £1 or $1 or €1 for this charity, we'd smash this initial total for the charity raise for these deserving families and young people. So if you can, please support the charity, and just your way of saying thank you for what Pete and I do, but also just showing goodwill to all these other people that are having it really, really difficult. And hopefully when the lockdown's over and done with, we can support them even more so by helping them celebrate, you know, different levels of freedom.
Oh, definitely. Mate, I wanted to just do a quick one. I'm always getting asked by people, what of your stocks do you think still look good value? Yeah. And I feel I'm in quite a nice situation because my portfolio has been doing pretty well this year and I haven't barely lifted a finger. And I still think there's a lot of stocks I hold that look pretty good value. So I'll just read them out very quickly on a list. So I've got Aviva, AV Dot, which we've already talked about. I think that still looks good. DGOC, Diversified Gas and Oil Company. I mean, that's got a massive dividend. Devro, the sausage skin maker, that one, I think that one's turning around and it's still got a very nice dividend, so I quite like that. Gately, GTLY, that one seems to have been forgotten about last few months, whatever. It's done hardly anything, but I think that looks cheap. Not cheap, it looks good value, yeah? LOK, lock and store, that's very much a growth play. I think that one, you know, buy it, sit on it. I think 5 years' time, it will be much higher than it is today, and I won't have to worry about it. Telecom Plus, TEP, definitely a dividend one. I think that's about 4.5% dividend. Great track record, and it's bringing in new services, it's growing, whatever. And Clinigen, CLIN, I think looks cheap. Got another one to talk about, which is a stock that I never see anyone talk about, is, do you know Elico? E-L-C-O.
I do, Pete.
Have you got it?
It's not one I had, Pete. It's not what I've had.
We're always doing that, aren't we?
Thankfully, it's not one that you're letting me having to talk about before I want to talk about it. No, but it's a very, very good company, Pete, and it's a really good niche. Yeah, go on, talk about it then.
Well, all I wanted to say was that it's had results recently, and I thought they're pretty damn good. And if I'm remembering rightly, because bear in mind I've got about 50,000 stocks buzzing around in my head, Elco does like building software. So they do things like, if there's construction of a building, project management, whatever, they do the project management software. But they also do loads of other building related software. So it's like if the building's already constructed, there might be like software that helps with the maintenance of the building and stuff, which helps schedule jobs and whatever. Yeah. But the thing that's really interesting about it is that in their recent results, they were talking about strategy, and they've set out very clear targets for the next 5 years, what they want to achieve. I'm pretty sure it's Elco. And I think if you look at it, you know, it's not one where you'd say, oh, that's really cheap. But I think it's one of those where I think the valuation is probably on like a forward PE of 22 or something. It's not what you call cheap. But I think it's one of those where, you know, being a software company, it's going to be high profit. I think it's going to SaaS, you know, software as a service, cloud stuff. And I think with its future growth ambitions, and it seems like a pretty switched on management, I think it could be an interesting one. I don't hold it.
Yeah, I agree with you, Pete. I think going forward, that their tech is going to be utilised more and more and more so regarding the construction of and the management of
stuff.
Building works going forward, mate. So yeah, that's a good one. I have had my eye on it, if I'm honest. I've kept my eye on that stock. I missed it in the March lows with all the other stuff I was looking at, and by the time I March 2020 lows, April lows, and by the time I looked at it again, I was a little bit like, I don't really want to buy it now. And you know what, it kept on going higher. And since then I've gone, right, okay, move on, because you know me, I don't like to chase stocks at all. So it's definitely one that should be kept an eye on. And if the market throws a wobbly, it's probably one I would definitely investigate further and look towards buying. Now, Pete, you know that I hold Ixico, which is neuroimaging. Yeah. And you know there's SDI out there, which is the cameras regarding imaging. There is a Israeli X-ray device maker called NanoX Imaging. Yeah, ticker right. Symbol $ NNOX on the US stock exchange. I've got my eye on that. It's already done quite well over a short space of time. It's not been around long, but it's a company that I've got my eye on. And the reason is because it's obviously a tech one, and it's in that medical imaging sort of space.
Okay.
Regarding X-rays, CAT scans, PET scans, and other imaging types, and essentially they've got this Nanox Arc, which people have to pay for, and you know it's in that sort of niche sort of area, Pete, which I'm thinking could do quite well. I'm just telling people about it because I had some news yesterday from the U.S. Food and Drug Administration that gave the company single source digital imaging clearance on Friday for a key regulatory approval for its technology. That's one to keep an eye on, really, regarding x-raying technology. I'm just sharing that one with you guys. I don't own it. It's one I've got my eye on. I may or may at some point look to investigate it further, but it's one to investigate. The share price today, as I just said, £41.60, ranging from £20.26 in the past 52 weeks to £94.81. Market cap at the minute, £2 billion. So yeah, AI, imaging, one of the ones that I like to keep an eye on across the water on the pond.
Sounds interesting. Mate, have you have we got time for a quick joke?
Go for it, mate. Go for it.
You were just talking about lab tests, so I think we need to sort of lighten up the tone a bit, you know. So right, I'm the world's worst joke teller, so this is going to be painful. But anyway, so a woman goes into a pet shop, right, and she's got his parrot in a cage.
Okay.
And she's got his parrot, and basically, it don't look too good. I mean, it looks dead, doesn't it? You know. So anyway, so the woman says, oh, "I've got my parrot. You know, what's going on with it? You know, it's not very good." He says, "Okay." He says, the vet says, we'll sort it out." So the woman's there waiting, and then all of a sudden, this black Labrador, right, walks into the room, comes up to the parrot, has a look at the parrot, yeah. And then it looks up at the vet, shakes its head, and it walks back out of the surgery door. Yeah. And the woman's like really bemused, like, what the hell's going on here? Then, right, next second, a little tabby, moggy cat thing comes into the surgery, goes up to the parrot in the cage, has a little sniff, you know, wiggles its whiskers a bit, turns to the vet, looks at the vet and shakes its head, and then walks off out the door again, right? And this woman's really like, what the hell's going on? I thought this bloke was a vet, you know. And what then happens is the woman says to the vet, she says, look, you know, well, the vet says to her, look, this parrot's dead. It's had it. She says, well, look, you know, I need a second opinion. And the vet says, well, look, he says, we've done the lab tests. We've done the CAT scan. It's definitely dead.
Right.
You're supposed to laugh now, but anyway, there you go.
Oh, Pete, I was waiting for a bigger punchline than that, mate.
It's the way I tell them.
Boom, boom. Oh my gosh.
Oh man, you love that. I know. I can tell you absolutely love that.
Well,
but I won't do any more jokes on the podcast.
No, I'm not. Yeah, sorry.
That would be the end of that.
Sorry about that, folks. Listen. I wanted to thank all of our listeners. As usual, the feedback we've had has been absolutely phenomenal regarding the podcast. The praise that was heaped on Tim Rogers regarding the insights he gave on EVs, AVs, electric vehicles, Tesla, Nissan, Volkswagen, Dieselgate, absolutely smashed across the park. People were just still writing feedback now. So we just wanted to say a big, big, big thank you to Tim for coming on as our guest in the last podcast. It was brilliant. There's just one downside. We never got to talk about his car collection and his bike collection. So we're going to try our level best to get him back at some point. If not, we're going to have him when we do our little road shows to pop by at one of them with nearer to Pete, so we can share a pint with him and you guys and ladies can hear what he's got to say about his car and bike collection. But just wanted to just say a really big, big thank you again to Tim for gracing us with his presence, his insight and his intellect, and also for sharing his level of humility that he did as well, because there's not many people I think of his stature would share some of the things that he shared. And I think that's something that's missing at the moment in investing. There's not enough humility. There's not enough people saying, actually, I'm not that good at this, and I'm not that good at that, and I'm trying to get better at that, or I can't do this, I choose to do that this way. Too many people are going, I'm the greatest dancer. You know, and you're not, and I'm not, and I'm still learning, and Tim's still learning. So, you know, do your level best to just find people on Twitter, across social media, that you can embrace, who share a certain level of dignity and also humility, because that shows that they're open to learning. You can learn the most by listening. Yeah. And too many people listen just to repeat back and answer back, not to learn. And the beauty of last podcast for me was listening and being in awe of Tim Rogers and just learning so much from him. So I just want to thank you again, Tim, for that.
Yeah, that's good, mate. That's all good.
Okie dokie, the gents. That's episode 46. That's Twin Peaks 46 from us. My name has been Peter Higgins. You can find me at Conkers 3 and my good friend Peter at Wheelie Dealer on Twitter. That's it from us. Wish you guys and ladies the best of health, continued success with your investing, and hopefully wherever you are, more and more freedoms going forward. Pete?
Yeah, no, thank you everybody, and thanks ladies and gentlemen, and we'll speak to you next time.
All right, guys, ladies, gents, take care. God bless. Bye for now.
This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast was brought to you in association with Sharepad from Sharescope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit sharescope.co.uk and discover the advantage.